Sunday with Miriam on RTE Radio 1. With Olay Total Effects Age-Defying Day Cream. Over 100 awards without paying hundreds of euros.
Well, Mona El-Tahawi, well, she's a high-profile feminist author and activist. Born in Egypt, she's reported from across the world on inequality, discrimination and the mistreatment of women and girls by what she calls the octopus of patriarchy. Well, if you come across her on Twitter, you'll know that Mona is combative, frequently funny, never dull and often very profane. Well, in her latest book, she claims it's time that women embraced some necessary sins. So let's find out what those are. Mona El-Tahawi, good morning and welcome.
Hello, Miriam. Thank you for having me.
Delighted. Now, listen, you have an article of faith, a personal commandment even. Tell my listeners what that is.
My article of faith is F the patriarchy.
And when you say F the patriarchy, who or what are you talking about?
Well, you know, people often wonder if I'm talking about men or a man, and I'm not. What I'm talking about is a system of oppressions that privileges male dominance. So I want people to imagine an octopus, and the head of the octopus is patriarchy, and each one of the tentacles is one of those oppressions. Racism, misogyny, capitalism, homophobia, ageism, things like that. And that's what I mean by the patriarchy, and that's what I want to destroy.
I think you also point out that the system, you believe that it's oppressive and potentially dangerous to many men too.
Absolutely. You know, I often say feminism for me is not equality with men. I want something much bigger than equality with men, because men themselves are not free of that octopus that I call patriarchy. Many men, I would wager the majority of men, are also caught between those tentacles of oppressions. So I want something much bigger than equality with men. I want to be free of patriarchy. And I think that most men, if they really sat down and were honest with themselves, would also want to destroy patriarchy. Because for the most marginalized, for the most vulnerable, they are hurt by patriarchy, but also those who think they're not marginalized or vulnerable. And in the United States, we saw that when the majority of white women voters voted for Donald Trump, and they voted for someone who is a misogynist and who actually hurts their interests as women, but they still voted for him because they think they benefit from patriarchy.
Now, you've got almost a unique worldview, Mona, given your own life story. Tell me about your background and the places you've lived and worked.
So I was born in Egypt, Miriam, and then my parents got scholarships to study for a PhD in medicine in London. So they moved us to London when I was 7 and Glasgow when I was 13. And then we moved to Saudi Arabia when I was 15, where I spent my teen years and began university. And then I moved back to Cairo, my hometown, to study journalism and to become a journalist. And in the middle of my journalism career, I moved to Jerusalem, where I was a correspondent for Reuters news agency. And then I moved to the US in 2000, where I have been since, with the exception of 4 years when I went back to Egypt to take part in feminist activism on the ground after our revolution. That's my life.
Fascinating, actually. Now, you've written a book in recent times, we'll talk about it soon, called The Seven Necessary Sins for Women and Girls. But tell me first, what was in your mind back in 2018 when you set out on the journey towards this book?
I wanted to write this book because I wanted to challenge polite feminism, because I feel that recently we see a spate of books that, instead of trying to destroy patriarchy, they're determined to make peace with patriarchy or create what I call a roadmap to peace with patriarchy. And I'm not interested in that. I wanted to write a manifesto that I want people to consider a Molotov cocktail to throw into the belly of that octopus that I call patriarchy. So my manifesto, The Seven Necessary Sins for Women and Girls, looks patriarchy in the eye and says, I will destroy you.
Wow. And also, I think, Mona, in the spring of 2018, you learned also of the young Pakistani woman who suffered a sexual assault. That had a big impact on you, too.
It did indeed, Miriam. In February of 2018, I heard that a young Pakistani woman called Sabiqa Khan had been sexually assaulted in Mecca, which is the holiest site for Muslims. I'm of Muslim descent. And I had also been sexually assaulted there while I was performing pilgrimage when I was 15 years old in 1982. Now, the Hajj for Muslims is the fifth pillar of Islam. So to hear that it was still happening to women in the holiest site for our religion just enraged me. And so I started hashtag MosqueMeToo, inspired by Tarana Burke, the black feminist activist who began saying Me Too in 2006. And this hashtag went viral, and I did it as a way of showing solidarity for fellow Muslim women. And that was also one of the inspirations for my book.
Well, were you not happy with how the Me Too movement evolved then, that you felt you had to set up a separate hashtag?
What Tarana Buck created was great back in 2006. But in 2017, we saw a spate of white Hollywood actresses who started saying Me Too in it while they were exposing sexual harassment and violence, you know, by Harvey Weinstein and other Hollywood executives. And while I applaud their courage, what I was witnessing was Me Too was becoming about privileged, wealthy, white women. And Me Too has to be about everyone. It has to be about working class women, Black, Indigenous, and women of color, Muslim women, Jewish women, Christian women, disabled women, older women. And so I wanted to throw my kind of like hat in that ring by saying Me Too should also be about Muslim women. And that's why I began hashtag Mosque Me Too, because it's a great burden to speak out about sexual violence. And for Muslim women specifically, I say we're caught between a rock and a hard place. The rock are Islamophobes and racists who themselves are misogynists, but who want to demonize all Muslims, specifically Muslim men. And the hard place is misogynists in the Muslim community who want to silence feminists like me because they accuse me of making us look bad. And I say, I don't make us look bad. It's misogyny that makes us look bad.
And just days after launching the Mosque Me Too campaign, tell me what happened in the club.
Well, you know, I was inundated with incredible stories by courageous Muslim women who shared how they were sexually assaulted and harassed in Mecca. And for me, self-care is to dance. So I went to a club with my beloved in Montreal, Canada, and we were dancing and having a great time. And then I felt a hand on my bum and I thought, you've got to be kidding me. How is this still happening? Now, I was 50 years old now. Back when I was first assaulted in Mecca, I was 15, covered in head to toe, with only my face and my hands showing, wearing hijab for the first time for pilgrimage. And now in 2018 in Montreal in a club, I was wearing a tank top and jeans, and it didn't matter, Miriam, what I was wearing, how old I was, whether it was pilgrimage or in a club. And this time around, I was determined to fight back, because when I was 15, I was young and I was confused and I froze, which is a perfectly normal reaction to sexual violence. So I tracked down this man who sexually assaulted me in a club. I ran up to him. I tugged at his shirt. He didn't expect me, of course, to be fighting back. I tugged at him so hard he fell. And I sat on him and I punched and I punched and I punched. And each time I punched him, I shouted at him, don't you ever touch a woman like that again. He stood up and he looked me in the eye because he wanted to see, who is this woman who just beat the hell out of me? And he could tell I was going to punch him again. So he ran away. And soon after that, I started hashtag I beat my assaulter, which also went viral.
Are you seriously suggesting, Mona, that the way for women to deal with these assaults is to physically attack the people who attack them? Are you suggesting violence is the way out of this?
So before I answer that question, I always, always preface my answer with, my priority for us all is to survive. And I understand fully, and that's why I say when I was 15, I froze and burst into tears. I understand fully, we can't always fight back. But I am very serious that for those of us who can fight back, we must fight back. Because none of the systems, this is where patriarchy the octopus comes in now, guarantee our safety or justice or accountability. And the reason I say that those of us who can fight back must fight back is because I want patriarchy to fear feminism. I want to terrify patriarchy. And Marianne Frank says something that I think we can all recognize. When a man walks down the street and sees another man, he thinks twice before picking a fight with him, because he thinks, you know what, he can take me on. But men do not think twice before they beat us or hurt us. And during this pandemic, under lockdown, there has been a spike of at least 30% in intimate partner violence against women, children, and queer people. And that tells you that men do not stop to think twice, wow, they can take me on. Because of that octopus called patriarchy, nothing stops them, because patriarchy socializes men into believing they are entitled to our bodies, and it enables and protects violent men.
I'm glad at the end you said they're violent men, because most men aren't violent. Do you believe that most men don't inflict violence on their partners or the women or men they live with?
My response to most men and those men who say, but I'm not violent, is even if most men are not violent and even if most men do not hurt women, children and queer people, they benefit from the violence that is inflicted on us, because that violence, be it rape, sexual assault, domestic abuse, that violence, it keeps us in our place. That's patriarchy's way of keeping us in our place. And unless most men actively disrupt that violence and actively challenge that violence and actively work to dismantle patriarchy and the ways that it enables and protects male violence, and this is cisgender male violence now, because I know trans men are also hurt. So unless all of those systems of oppressions are dismantled, most men benefit from the violence of men.
I'm conscious also that a lot of young men feel quite lost in the world at the moment. I mean, the way you portray patriarchy, it looks like, you know, all young men are running the world and will run the world. But we know young men take their lives far more than young women do. We know a lot of young men are quite sensitive, are quite insecure. So how do you put your message across without alienating all those young men more?
Well, you know, those young men that you mentioned are taking their lives at alarming rates. My response to that is it's patriarchy that is hurting you. Because when you look at the tentacle of capitalism, for example, who benefits from capitalism? It's a tiny minority. We call them now the 1%. During this pandemic, when so many people have been hurt, whether because they've been pushed out of the labor force, the workforce, or because poverty hurts us at all times, but especially during the pandemic, billionaires have become richer. So I urge men, especially young men, to look at that octopus and recognize the ways that it hurts them. It tells them that it's not manly to be sensitive. It tells them that a man should and a man does and a man doesn't. And what a man should strive for is to be free, because that's what I say my ambition is. My ambition is to be free of patriarchy. So I absolutely hear you, Miriam, and I urge young men especially to look at patriarchy and to recognize the ways it hurts them and become my accomplice in destroying patriarchy.
So let's talk a little about your sins. They're not sins at all, of course, are they, Mona?
No, they're virtues. I've taken, you know, Christianity's deadly sins and subverted them. And I called them sins because patriarchy doesn't want us to have these attributes or to do these things or to want to be those things. The seven sins in order of kind of increasing importance are anger, attention, profanity, ambition, power, violence, and lust.
Okay, let's talk about anger. I mean, so often anger or angry, it's used, I suppose, as a pejorative term against women, especially feminists. But you freely admit to anger and rage, and you want all women and girls to embrace that anger.
Absolutely. I'm a very angry woman, and I'm enraged most of the time. And when people
You don't sound very angry.
I am very angry. And when people ask me what inspires you, Mona, I tell them whatever made me angry that day inspires what I write. You know, people think anger is the beginning and the end of it all. We have to understand that anger is a most suitable and perfect reaction to injustice. And that's why girls are socialized out of anger, because patriarchy wants them to think that if we're nice, if we're polite, if we say please and thank you and all of this business, that we will be given crumbs to basically make us go away. And that is not the way that we dismantle or destroy that patriarchy called octopus. But I also remind people that anger is a privilege that not everyone can wield. So in the United States, for example, Black girls are considered to be adults at such a young age. And it's a terrible stereotype of Black women, the angry Black woman, like you were saying about feminists too. And that's because Black girls and Black women are the ones who are most caught between the tentacles of that octopus. So we have to understand that we are put off from being angry because patriarchy recognizes the power of anger in arming us in our fighting back against it. And I quote in my book something called the Early Global Adolescent Study that shows that by the age of 10, most girls around the world, regardless of where you live, because the study was carried out around the world, have accepted that they are weak and vulnerable. So we have to ask what happens to that pilot light of rage? What puts it out in girls and why is it put out? And I posit in my chapter that patriarchy teaches girls, rather than expressing anger out at injustice, to absorb it in. And so you see sadness and anxiety and self-harm and eating disorders. And that's why I think it's healthy, not just necessary, but healthy to express anger especially when it's justifiable rage against injustice.
And Mona, before I let you go, what about the F-bombs? Which are going to give my producer a little headache today, but why do you enjoy them so much? And why do you encourage others to embrace profanity?
Profanity, Miriam, for me is politically important. I spend half the chapter on the sin of profanity talking about an incredible feminist from Uganda called Dr. Stella Nyanzi, who has actually been imprisoned by the regime in her country for being deliberately and intentionally profane. I say I am profane and I enjoy because there is nothing polite about patriarchy. There is nothing polite about racism. And when we are urged to be polite to racists and when we are urged to be polite to patriarchy, we are basically urged to uphold the authority of racism and uphold the authority of patriarchy. And I say, F- that. I will never be polite to racism or patriarchy. And I urge people to remember that violence against women and queer people and all of those tentacles that are the oppressions of patriarchy are much ruder, much more profane than my saying F- or any other profanity.
Well, Mona El-Tahawi, it's a great read, your book, The Seven Necessary Sins for Women and Girls, written by you. It's published by Tram Press and it's available from everyone's local bookshop. I've enjoyed very much talking to you, Mona, and take care of yourself.
Thank you so much, Miriam. It's been a pleasure.
And we've had lots of reaction to Mona. Finian Murphy says, most men, if they sat down themselves, would want to crush the patriarchy. Damn right. Great to hear you on with Miriam. Another Joan says, Miriam, I don't want to be lectured by that feminazi on this fine Sunday morning. Whose idea was that? Brian Antlin Dawkins says, hi, Miriam, this woman is talking common sense. Are we ready for common sense, though? That's the question. Another says, refreshing to hear Mona on Miriam this morning. That's Shona Murray. Dr. Catherine Nocton says, so it's not okay with Mona's suggestion that women should physically assault their abusers, and Miriam can't overcome violence with more violence or better ways. Another says, Miriam, let's have Mona on primetime soon. And one last one, Miriam, Eamon says this in Terranure, would you ever get that man-hating nutter off the radio? Okay, after the break, it's Rosita Boland on loneliness.